For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, so we're up to, as I said, Utsfanya Perek Beis. Pasuk starts, Hiskoshu Vakoshu Hagoy Lo Nichsaf. Hiskoshu Vakoshu, there are two ways of translating it. One is that gathered together, Hiskoshu gathered together, from the language of, we find that gathering in the Torah, the word kash is used. You have that word in Shmos, when Paro takes away the straw. It says that the Jews gathered, the Jews went around all of Eretz Mitzrayim, lekoshesh kash, latevin. So lekoshesh kash means to gather straw. In fact, straw is called kash because it's gathered. So that's one place you have in the Chumash. And you also have the mekoshesh, that's which some learn was tzalafchad, but the mekoshesh, the one who was mechal Shabbos and was stoned for chilul Shabbos, for having desecrated Shabbos, there's a machlokas in the Gemara exactly what he did. One explanation is that he gathered, he was me'amer, he gathered wood. So that's the language of hiskoshishu, gathered together, vakoshu, and serve Hashem in a gathered together fashion. Get together to serve Hashem. So this is the Navi imploring Klal Yisrael that they should gather together to serve Hashem. The other way of translating the words are hiskoshishu, beautify yourselves. And the Gemara says that this phrase is used, hiskoshishu, first beautify yourself, vokoshu, then demand that others beautify themselves. This is the old, well-known rule that if you want to give mussar, you want to be critical of somebody else, make sure that you've got your own self set up well, that you're not acting in a manner that is the opposite of what you're trying to tell someone else to do. So so this is hiskoshishu vakoshu, that you should first make yourselves beautiful and then beautify others. Hagoy lo nichsaf, the goy, the nation, lo nichsaf, that is not desiring to be close to Hashem. You, this nation, that is not desiring to be close to Hashem, so you should hiskoshu vakoshu, either gather together and serve Hashem, or beautify yourselves and then beautify others, meaning to keep the Torah. That is hagoy lo nichsaf, the nation that is currently not desiring to be near Hashem. The word nichsaf, you have also in the Chumash, it means to desire to be with, to be someplace. You have that Lavan says to Yaakov, ki nichsaf nichsaf talabei savicha. You ran away because you desired to be with at your father's house. Pasuk Beis, the terem ledes chok, before the punishment comes. Do this before the punishment comes. Kamotz avar yom. Don't be like motz. Motz is chaff that is blown away by the day, by the wind. Don't be like that. That's gone in the same day that it appears. Don't be that. V'terem lo yavo aleichem charon af Hashem, before it shouldn't come upon you the anger of Hashem. V'terem lo yavo aleichem yom af Hashem, before it should come upon you the pain of the anger of Hashem. These two phrases are very similar. You have charon af Hashem, the anger of Hashem, and you have yom af Hashem, the day of the anger of Hashem. So the two phrases are obviously very similar. The way the Malbim explains it is that the day of the anger is the worse of the two, meaning that the first phrase is, you should be close to Hashem so that on the day of his anger, you will not be subject to his anger. You won't be subject to the Charon of Hashem. And then moreover, you won't even be subject to the day itself. You won't have to be there on the day of his anger. There won't be a day of anger for you to deal with. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Bakshu es Hashem kol anvei aretz. Seek Hashem, all those who are humble of the land. Asher mishpato pa'alu, that they kept his statutes. They did what he said to do. Bakshu tzedek, bakshu anavas, seek righteousness, seek humility. Ulai tisasu v'amat Hashem, perhaps you'll be protected on the day of the anger of Hashem. The Gemara in Chagiga lists several different psukim. This is one of them where the Gemara says that kule hai v'ulai, all this, and it's still only maybe. Seek righteousness, seek humility. Ulai tisasu, perhaps you will be protected on the day of the anger of Hashem. Because the Jews had been worshiping Avodah Zarah, it was a situation that was not, that was a dangerous situation. And even if the Jews would do better, but it's still only Ulai, perhaps will be protected. The Gemara says when Rabbi Ami would reach this pasuk, when he would be learning Tanakh, and we get to this pasuk, he would cry. Because he would say, Kule hai v'ulai, all this, and it's still only maybe will be protected. And maybe we'll be protected. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Ki aza azuvasiye, because if you do this, if you join Hashem, you come close to Hashem, then all of your enemies will be subdued. Aza, which is one of the cities that was frequently attacking the Jewish people, Azuvasiya will be forsaken. The Ashkelon, Lishmama, and Ashkelon will be destroyed. Ashdod bat Saharai Yigar Shua. Ashdod, in the middle of the day, will be chased away. The Ekron, Teaker, and Ekron will be uprooted. All of these enemies of the Jews will be destroyed. Hoy Yoshbe Febel Hayam Goy Kere Sim. Now this pasuk is dedicated to the Plishtim. Woe to those who dwell on the edge of the sea, the nation to be cut off. As we know, the Plishtim live on the coast. What is today the Gaza Strip is the Eretz Plishtim, that's the land of the Plishtim. So they live on the coast, and the pasuk says the Plishtim will be cut off. Dvar Hashem Aleichem, the word of Hashem is against you. Kenan Eretz Plishtim. It's written backwards. The Plishtim who dwell in the land of Kenan. I will destroy you, that there will be no one dwelling in your land. And that area near the sea will turn into a living place for the roim, for the shepherds. This refers to the Jewish shepherds who will be able to find places to eat their meals over there in the desolate areas that used to belong to the Plishtim, the Gidros Tzon, and a place to shepherd sheep. And they will turn into a place for the remnant of the house of Yehuda, that they will dwell there, they'll shepherd there. Vate Ashkelon, in the houses of Ashkelon, but Erev here, but soon in the evenings they will find a place to relax. Ki Yifkedem Hashem Elokehem, for the God of their fathers, meaning the Jews, will Hashem will remember them. Yishav Shvisam, and he will return those who had been taken captive. Savanya continues, Shamati Cherpas Moav. He says, in the name of Hashem, I have heard Moav, how they have degraded you, what they've said, the evil words they've said about you. The Gidufe Bnei Amon, and also the evil words of the children of Amon. Asher Chirfu Esami, that they have shamed my nation. Vayagdilu Al Gvulam, and they increased all of the bad things that were happening to the Jewish people. This is a reference to when we were being taken into Golus, to Babel, so our captors took us past the lands of Moab and Ammon. And Moab and Ammon, they came outside very helpfully, and they derided us as we went by. And they said, "What are you upset about? What are you crying? What's the big deal? You're anyway going back to your roots. You're going to Babel. That's where you're from anyway." Anyway, the pasuk says, as we read in the Haggadah, "Mitchila ovde avorazara hayu avosin." That's not what the pasuk says. That's what the Haggadah says. That initially, that originally our ancestors were ovde avorazara, terach avi Avraham. And we bring the pasuk over there that Hashem took us out of Eber Hanahar, across the river, meaning in Babel. We started in Babel. So Ammon and Moab, they derided us. They said, "What are you so upset about? You're going back to your roots." So Hashem says, "I remember how they derided you, how they shamed you on your way to Golus. Therefore, Lachem, Pasuk 10, verse 9, Lachem, Chayani, Nu, Hashem, Tzvokos, therefore Hashem says, I swear by my life, says Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, the God of the Jews, Ki Moav Kisdom Tihiyah. Moav will be absolutely destroyed like Sodom, Uvnei Amon Ka'amora, and Bnei Amon will be absolutely destroyed like Amora. And this is Midah Keneged Midah, that's measure for measure. They derided us. They said, "Oh, you're just going back to your roots. You're going back to where you came from." So Hashem says, "I will return you, Moab and Ammon, to where you came from." They are descendants of Lot. Lot was in Sodom. And Hashem says, if you're going to make fun of those going into Golus, that they're going back to their roots, then I will send you back to your roots, and I will turn you into Sodom and into Amora, which means Mimshak Charul, that there will be the noises of Charul. Charul is the thorns. You have a desolate area, and they're just these bushes, thorn bushes, and as the wind blows, they bang against each other, they make some noise. Umichre melech, and your area will be a place where they will harvest salt. It'll be totally desolate, it will not be fertile. And ushmama ad olam, and desolate forever. Sheris ami yivazum, the remnants of my people will despoil you, you Amon and Moab. Yeser goi in chalum, and the rest of the nations will take over them, will conquer them. Zos lahem tachas geonam. This happens to them in place of their haughtiness, their arrogance. Ki cherfu vayadilu alam Hashem tzvokos, because they degraded and they acted haughtily over the nation of Hashem. Nora Hashem Alehem, Hashem is awesome on them, meaning now we're talking about the non-Jews. Hashem is awesome on them. Ki raza eis kol Elohei ha'aretz, because he has laid waste all of the gods of the land. When he will take all the Avodah Zarah and destroy them, then he will be awesome to the non-Jews. Yishtachavu lo ish mimekomo kol iye hagoyim. And each man in his place will bow to Hashem, all of the places of the non-Jews. Iye Hagoyim could mean islands, and it could also mean countries. Gam atem Kushim, also you, the Kushim, those who are from the land of Kush, that would be roughly Ethiopia, also you, who also attacked the Jewish people in their day, Chalei Charbi Hema, you will be the corpses of my sword. So we're just going from nation to nation over here, Hashem's punishment. V'yet yadol al tzafon, Hashem will stretch his hand on the north, v'yabedas ashur, and destroy Assyria, v'yasemis ninveh l'shmama, and then you will make Ninveh totally desolate, sia kamidbar, completely empty, like the wilderness. This is a reference to the third destruction of Ninveh. You'll recall, we had Yonah talk about the destruction of Nineveh. Then we had Nahum, which was all about the destruction of Nineveh. And at that time, we talked about how there was another destruction of Nineveh, a total destruction, which would be mentioned later. And this is where it's mentioned here in Sfania, the total destruction of Nineveh. And all of the nations will will have their flocks rest there, all in that area, because it'll be an empty plot of land where Nineveh used to be. Gam Ka'as, Gam Kipod, and also these two wild birds, Ka'as and Kipod, are two different wild birds. Bechaftoreha Yalinu, they will rest on the rooftops. Kol Yeshorer Bachalon, there'll be the sound will be singing in the window, meaning the sound of the birds will be singing in the windows. You have to picture a totally desolate, empty house that's just sitting there, and then the wildlife takes over. Chorev Basaf, there'll be destruction in the Saf. The Saf is the stoop of the house. Ki Arza Era, for its Erez, its cedar, meaning the cedar of the house, which is usually the roof, will rot. Zos Ha'ir Ha'aliza, Hayosheves Lavetach, this city, this exalted city that was sitting sure of itself, Ha'omra Bilvava, that said in its heart, Ani, the Afsiod, I, and there is nothing else. The people of Nineveh would say, our city is it, there is nothing else. How it will be to be just totally destroyed. Mar Beit Lachaya, a place for wild animals to rest. Kol Over Alela Yishok, all who pass by will whistle. Yania Yado will wave their hand as if to say, wow, look what happened to them. That's what's going to happen to Nineveh. And as we've mentioned here, many of the enemies of the Jewish people, once we turn things around ourselves, then Hashem will do all of this to those enemies of ours. So let me just let in a few more people here. So these are that is Perek Beis, which ends off on a very positive note. We're not done yet with the Musar that Sefania is going to give us, the Jewish people. We'll get to that in Perek Gimel, the third Perek, which will be next week. But now we have to discuss two different points in this perek that we read, but now we're going to discuss them more in depth. So we'll go back to Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Please look back at verse 3, Pasuk Gimel. The Pasuk says, Bakshu es Hashem kolan be'aretz, seek Hashem, all the humble people of the land, Hashem Yishbato Pa'alu, that when we translated this to say that his laws, they did. They did what Hashem said to do. Bakshu tzedek, bakshu anava, seek righteousness, seek humility, ulai tisasu b'yom av Hashem, perhaps we'll be protected in the day of the anger of Hashem. This phrase, Mishpato Pa'alu, which again literally means poel, means to do something. So this phrase means that they were poel, they did. What did they do? Mishpato, they did his mishpat, they did his laws. That's what they did. So that's the simple meaning. However, there is a deeper meaning. I'm going to reference back here to a story that we had back in at the end of Shmuel Beis. And if you recall, at the end of Shmuel Beis, which is the end of David HaMelech's reign, at the end of his life, there was a famine. There was a 3-year famine, and the Navi and the Gemara elaborates, says that we do not know why the famine happened. But if you recall, when we learned it, we explained then that there's two aspects to the famine. One has to do with David HaMelech himself, and the other has to do with the people. So Rashi explains over there, we don't know why the people were punished. We don't know what the people did wrong. The people did something wrong, which is why they were punished. But in this particular instance, we were not given information of what the people had done to deserve the 3-year famine. But we were given information for something that was done by the leadership for why they deserved that would happen in their day. Again, you have two different elements here. You always do. You have why does it happen in David HaMelech's day, and why do the people have to suffer at all? So why the people had to suffer, we weren't told. We do know they did something wrong and they were being punished, but we're not being told what that thing is. But we are told why the famine happened from David's perspective. Now, David HaMelech asks Hashem why it's happening, and Hashem responds, it is because of Shaul HaMelech that the famine happened. So what happened with Shaul HaMelech? So the Gemara explains there's two things that happened with Shaul HaMelech. One thing that happened with Shaul HaMelech is that they did not give a proper hesped to Shaul HaMelech. They did not eulogize Shaul HaMelech properly. And that's why there was a famine, because they did not eulogize Shaul HaMelech the way they should have. The Gemara says another reason is because Shaul HaMelech hurt the Giv'onim. He hurt those people from Giv'on who were hurt when Shaul had killed Nov Ir HaKohanim. Shaul didn't personally kill the Kohanim of Nov, but Shaul commanded that the city of Nov be destroyed. And when that happened, since the Giv'onim were the ones who had tricked Yehoshua, the Giv'onim were really members of Canaan, and they should have been killed when we came into Eretz Yisrael. But they tricked Yehoshua into believing that they had come from another nation outside of Canaan. And Yehoshua swore to them that he would protect them and they would not be killed. Then it was determined that they were really from Canaan. So Yehoshua, because he had sworn to them he could not kill them, and he accepted them as Gerim, but he gave them their livelihood as Chotvei Eitzim Shavei Mayim. He gave them menial tasks. That their job would be to chop wood and draw water for the Kohanim when the Kohanim are serving the Beis HaMikdash. So Nov, which was the city of the Kohanim, Nov is a little town right outside Yerushalayim where the Kohanim lived, and the Givonim, they were the ones who took care of the basic needs of the Kohanim, the wood and the water for the Kohanim. When Shaul had Nov killed, so then the Givonim lost their livelihood. And as a result of that, this famine happened. This famine happened because Shaul hurt the Givonim. So it's for two reasons. It's because Shaul was not eulogized properly, number one. Number two, because Shaul hurt the Givonim. The rest of the story over there is that David HaMelech tried to appease the Givonim. He sent a hesped for Shaul, and then he tried to appease the Givonim. The Givonim were not willing to listen. All they wanted were to kill some of Shaul's descendants as punishment. And David HaMelech was forced to let them do that. That's a whole story how that happened. You can reference that shir, which we had back whenever it was, at the end of Shmuel Beis, if you want to hear the whole story. But then David HaMelech said that, this is a famous quote, that the Jewish people are Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomle Chasadim. The Jewish people are merciful, and we are Baishanim, literally means we have shame, which means we understand what it means to have dignity. And we are Gomle Chasadim, we do chesed, we do kindness. And these Givonim, they were unwilling to relent, they were unwilling to have mercy, and therefore David made a gezerah. He made a rule that they are not allowed to marry a regular Jewish girl. They are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So that's the story over there. However, the Gemara points out this is very strange, that there should be a three-year famine on account of Shaul. One is on account of the fact that he was not eulogized properly, and two, because he did something wrong, because he hurt the Givonim. that seems to be contradictory. Was it because he, Shaul, did something incorrect, that's why there was a famine? Or was it because we Jews did not treat Shaul properly? That's why there was a famine. On the one suggestion is that it's Shaul's fault. The other suggestion is it's because we didn't treat Shaul the way we should have. So which one is it? So the Gemara says they're both true and brings this pasuk in Sefania that says, Asher mishpatal pa'alu. And the way the Gemara explains it is that even as mishpato, even as we are being, Hashem judges somebody, there's a mishpat, there's a judgment against somebody, at that moment, also pa'olu, also his deeds are mentioned. That in the same action, Hashem can be taking someone to task for something they did wrong, that's mishpato, and still also be emphasizing his greatness with the word pa'alu, his deeds. And that's what happened here, that Shaul was both being taken to task for something he did wrong, and also we Jews were being taken to task for not having treated Shaul the way we should have, and recognizing his greatness. Both those things happen at the same time. It is not contradictory. Hashem is able in one action, in one happening, he's able to make to incorporate both elements of the of a person, both what he did right and what he did wrong in the same happening. Another point we're going to discuss this evening is with Pasuk Yud-Dal, verse 14. So here we're going to move into something completely different. I'm going to pause here for a moment. If anybody has a question about what we just discussed, I don't know if I'll be able to answer it, but we can try, and then we will move on to this last piece that we're going to talk about. You have to unmute yourself if you want to ask the question. Okay, we're going to move on then. Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. V'ravtsu v'socha adarim kochai sogoi. So this was referring to how Nineveh would be desolate, and it's describing like a desolate place which is taken over by wildlife. So they will relax in there. These flocks of the nations. Gam ka'as, gam kipot, also different types of wild birds. B'chaftorea in the roof. B'chaftorea yalinu. In the roof they will rest. Kol yishorer b'chalon. The sound will be sung in the window. That's the sound of the birds singing in the window. Chorev basaf, destruction in the stoop of the house. Ki arza era, for its eras, its cedar, its roof is rotted. The Gemara says in Maseches Sota, just open up the Gemara over here. Maseches Sota on Memches Amud Aleph, it's 48a. The Mishnah is talking about different things as the decline of the Jewish people, the decline of Eretz Yisrael as we got closer and closer to the Golus, and then beyond the Golus, as things started to decline in general. So the Mishnah tells us, Misha Batla Sanhedrin, once the Sanhedrin became Batal, became null and void, it was no longer a Sanhedrin, Batla Hashir Mibes HaMishtos. So then there no longer was song in the houses. Beis HaMishtos means a bar, means a place to drink. That no longer was their song. A rule was made as the things started to go bad, and there was more and more destruction, and the Golus was getting closer, and then beyond, when the Golus actually happened, various rules were enacted for us to remember the Golus. And one of the things was that there would no longer be shir It would no longer be, shir means song or music, in the house of in the where they drink. So the Gemara tells us, Amar Rav, Udna b'shama zimra, the ear that hears song, that hears music, te'aker should be uprooted. Meaning, once there is a korban, once there is a destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, a person should not listen to music. Amar Rava says, zimra b'vesa, if there is music in a house, korva b'sifa, there'll be destruction in the stoop of the house. Shenemar, quoting our verse over here, kol yeshorer b'chalon, the sound of music in the window, chorev basaf, there'll be destruction in the stoop, ki arza era, for its cedar has rotted. And the Gemara goes on in that vein, talking about the fact that there should not be singing or song or music once we have the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara qualifies this and says, well, you know, before I read the rest of this Gemara over here, let me do a little bit of explaining what's going on. There is a rule that we are not allowed to listen to music ever. Not just now during Sfira or during the 3 weeks, but there's a rule, it's in Shulchan Aruch, that we Jews, since the Churban, once we have the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we're not allowed to listen to music. That is a general rule. Now, we know that we do listen to music, except during these times, like Sfira during the 3 weeks, we know we do listen to music. So that's because there is a difference of opinion exactly how this rule of not listening to music, when it applies. Everybody agrees it does not apply at a sudas mitzvah. When we are getting together for a meal that is a mitzvah, everybody agrees that there one is allowed, and perhaps it's even a mitzvah, to have music. And that's why at a wedding, music is perfectly fine. Not just perfectly fine, it's part of the experience of a wedding. It's meant to be. And that's true for any sudas mitzvah, that music is permitted. Everybody agrees to that. The question is, when it's not a sudas mitzvah, when is it usher? There are different opinions. And the opinions range from, it's always usher, it's always prohibited, to limiting it significantly. Our practice is that when it's not the 3 weeks and it's not Sfira, then we follow the lenient opinions and we limit what is considered when this rule applies. So when does it apply? It would apply to live music. That's number one, live music, number one. Number two, during a meal. Live music at a meal should be avoided. One should not have live music at a meal any time of the year, because we're in Golis, except during a time of a Sudas Mitzvah, or let's say Chol HaMoed, which is a happy time. But normally, a regular meal, one should not have live music at the meal, musical accompaniment. We're not talking about a child in the other room who is practicing their clarinet. We're talking about real and live entertainment music at a meal. That should be avoided, because we are in Golis. One should not have that in a normal day when it is not a Sudas Mitzvah or it is not a Yom Tov like Chol HaMoed or something like that. That is how we generally keep this rule. It does not say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch that during Sfira or during the 3 weeks, we're not allowed to listen to music. It doesn't say that. It says we can't get haircuts, we can't get married, and a few other things during the 9 days. But it doesn't say that we're not allowed to listen to music. But we all know that we don't listen to music. That's because during the 3 weeks and during during Sfira, we follow the more stringent opinion about music, which is that all music is prohibited. And therefore, we do not listen to music at all during Sfira and during the 3 weeks, because we are taking the stringent opinion about music, that opinion holds of this stringent position all year round. But we keep that opinion during the 3 weeks and during Sphira. But the rest of the year, we go with the more lenient opinion that it only applies to during a meal. The truth is there are a few other times that it applies, but they're very limited. The Gemara says one should not go to sleep or wake up to live music. That means live music that is being done to lull you to sleep or to wake you up in the morning in a, not talking about a jarring tone to wake you up in the morning, but like a pleasant waking up in the morning. Those are also things that one should avoid, but those are so uncommon today. We don't generally have live music unless a person is, I don't know. But to find somebody like that, something like that, where you have a person who has the luxury of live music to lull them to sleep and wake them up, that's highly unusual. But the meal situation, that's where it is common or can be common. And again, we're adopting the more lenient opinion the whole year round, but on Sphira and on 3 weeks, we adopt the more stringent opinion. Now, there are exceptions to this, even during the 3 weeks and even during Sphira, there are exceptions. One of them is mentioned here in the Gemara. I'll read it to you. The Gemara says,
Amar Rav Huna, Zimra denagdi udebakri shari. He says that music of the Nagdi and the Bakri. So who are the Nagdi and the Bakri? Rashi tells us the Nagdi are those who are Moshe Sfinos Bechevel, those who pull boats with a rope. They used to have canals and people would stand on the bank and pull the boats along. So that's the Nagdi, and the Bakri are those who are shepherding. So the music that they are singing or that they're playing, that is acceptable. The Girdai Osir, but those of the weavers, is prohibited. And Rashi explains that those who pulled the boats and those who shepherded, the music was used in order to help them with their job. Those who pulled the boats needed to synchronize what they were doing. And as you know, music is very good to help people be in a rhythm and be able to do something at the same pace. And therefore, that's acceptable. Similarly, those who shepherded, apparently the music helped with the shepherding. Whereas the weavers, as Rashi says, that's just schok. That's just frivolity. And that's prohibited. So even the stringent opinion would hold that music is acceptable when it's not being done for simply the pleasure of listening to music. But when there is a utilitarian purpose in the music, even the stringent opinion would say it's okay. So this is why people ask often, during Sphira, when I hold of Sphira and I listen to music, what about when I'm exercising? Am I allowed to use music if it helps me exercise? So the answer to that is, yes, you can, provided that the reason for the music is to help you exercise. It gets you to be able to do your exercise the way you're supposed to do it. If it's just because I want to listen to music because I enjoy the music, that should be avoided. That should not be done. But if it has a purpose other than the pleasure of the music, then it is permitted. It's also permitted. Parents who have small children and they need to occupy their children, music is again permitted because there the purpose is to occupy the children. I always tell the parents in that situation, just make sure you're picking music that the kids like, not music that you like. Because it's only permitted because you're doing it for the purpose of caring for the children. A person is driving long distances and the music helps them stay awake. The music helps them focus and concentrate and not be able to drive better. Then the music is permitted because the purpose there is to be able to drive better. The purpose is not solely to enjoy the music. So the even when we adopt a stringent opinion, there are situations where music is permitted, as we are explaining right now based on the Gemara here. Now you should know that, just so you're aware of this, that there are even those who are so stringent as to say that when music is prohibited, it's not just instrumental music, it's even singing.
that one should not be singing regularly, that that also should be avoided because of the Churban, because of the instruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So again, we don't adopt that stringency. We do sing, but you should be aware there is such an opinion out there that even personally singing should be avoided because of the Churban. Now, music is today, it's a very common part of our culture. We live in a time when, because of technology, music is all around us, and it's something which is an accompaniment all the time. You go into a store, there's music playing. You go into a restaurant, there's music playing. There's always music. It's always there. You go to a website, they have music on the website. There's always music going on. So that is a function of the way we live. We're very used to it. Background music is not what's being discussed over here. We're talking about listening to music for the sake of the enjoyment of the music, not that it's something accompanying the main thing you're trying to do, and then there's music in the background. We're not talking about that either. It is important also to note that I have a good friend who, when he was moving from Eretz Yisrael with his family, a young family many years ago, and they were moving to a community in the United States, an out-of-town community, not Atlanta, where he was going to be involved in spreading Torah, he and his wife, and they were concerned about raising their children in that community after having been in Eretz Yisrael, and now they were moving to an out-of-town community in the United States. So he went to of Shlomo Volva, Zichrono Livracha, and asked him for some advice for the children should be raised properly. So he gave him a lot of pieces of advice, but one of the things he told him is, make sure that your home is a happy home. Make sure it's a place that your children enjoy being in. And one of the things he said to him is, make sure there's music frequently in your house, that there should be music, a lot. Music should be a common thing in your house, that your children should view the house as a happy place to be. So that story just emphasizes that although we do have opinions that are very, very strict about music, nevertheless, there are reasons why we adopt the more lenient opinions most of the year when it's not Sfira and it is not the 3 weeks. Because we're on the topic, I do want to mention to you that one of the more recent innovations in Jewish music for this time of year is that a cappella music. There's no instruments; it's just singing by voice, and the thinking goes that that would be okay. That's because it's not instrumental music, and the whole issue is instrumental music. So first of all, as I've mentioned to you already, there are those who say that even non-instrumental music, meaning vocal music, is a problem as well. There are those who say that. But even without that, the real professional a cappella music is done so well that they want you to feel that it's not done strictly by voice, but actually there are instruments involved as well. And if it's that good that you can't tell that it's a person's voice, that rather it sounds like an instrument, then that really shouldn't be okay. This is not some sort of a gzeiras hakasuv. It's not like, well, this only looks like pork, but it's not pork, so you're allowed to eat it. That's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about the enjoyment that comes from instrumental music. That's the issue. And because of the Churban, because of the destruction of the Samigdash, so we're supposed to limit our enjoyment in that way. So this time of year, when we are stringent and we
When I say this time of year, I mean those who are already keeping Sfira. Those who are not yet keeping Sfira will already be keeping it next week. So this time of year, when the whole point is that we adopt a stringent opinion, if that kind of music brings the same kind of joy as instrumental music, because it sounds like it's instrumental, well then the fact that it's only done by voice, of course, defeats the purpose. And there should not be any difference between a cappella music and when it's that good and instrumental music. It should all be the same. Also, you should be aware that Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky is of the opinion that that a recording device, when you listen to music, when you listen to singing or music, you listen to it on a device, any device, your computer, your phone, whatever it is, when you play something, then that thing that you're playing it on is the instrument. He holds that if I'm playing music on a I have a device and it's playing music, that device is the instrument. And therefore, even if it is singing, vocal singing that's coming out of that instrument, it's instrumental because this has now become an instrument. The fact that it's what it's playing is people singing, he holds, would not change the fact that now I'm using an instrument. It's not somebody live singing to me, but rather it is an instrument that is playing what someone is singing. And therefore, that is an instrument, no different than that child's clarinet. So I'm just giving you a broad range over here. You should know that there are different opinions on this. And of course, if you have a question, you should ask your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi, for guidance. But you should just be aware of the range. And that way, if you hear something, you shouldn't think, well, that doesn't make any sense. I never heard of that. Well, now you've heard of it. There are different opinions out there. And also to understand better what's going on over here, that this time of year we are adopting the stringent opinion of what should apply all year round. Where all year round we take the more lenient opinions. Okay, we are going to stop here. We're going to pause if anybody has questions before we actually close the shiur down. But before you ask questions, let's just make sure that we all understand that Mitzvah Hashem, we will meet again next week, same time, and the same Zoom, whatever it is, login, whatever you call this. So just keep that information. I assume that Dina will send that out again Nicole will send that out again before next week. So we'll keep it Wednesdays, as we always do, Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Okay, so questions. I saw a hand, actually. Anybody have a question? Anybody? Okay. I guess nobody has a specific question. Okay, thank you for joining. Mitzvah Hashem next week, same time. And those of you who want to join or are in the Chumash year, we're restarting that as well. That is Sundays at 7 p.m.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.